Well, hello and welcome to the Profit Express. I am Tim Healy, and I'm inviting you to join me each and every week so together we can win the battle for business. That's right. And as always, hey, thanks so much for sharing some of your time with me today. Now, when you hear names like Coke and Apple and BMW and Starbucks, you think immediately of the brand, the experience, the feeling that those names conjure up in your mind. And you're also thinking, if you're the small business owner listening and watching, you're thinking, yeah, those are, you know, mega global brands. I've got my small little business here in town. I could obviously never compete with them. And probably, let's face it, I'm not much of a brand. I'm just a small local business. Well, you know what? I don't think that's acceptable, quite frankly, as the host of the Profit Express, as a business owner myself, because I think in a global economy, in a digital economy where the amount of people out there and the brands that are out there has grown so much, and all of the noise that's out there for people vying for attention becomes more and more competitive by the day, I think you owe it to yourself to begin to embrace the fact that even if you are a small business, you can have a brand. That's right. You absolutely can have a brand. Now, listen, you're not going to necessarily compete with a Starbucks or a Coca-Cola, but why not think about becoming a real powerful local brand or a real powerful regional brand? That is a potential. It can be a reality for you. And today's guest is someone who did just that. He has a very interesting background. He has a very interesting story. He has a background as a musician, as a rock star. And he partnered up with his wife, who has the business background. And in 1995, they decided to get into the tattooing industry and piercing industry, which at the time didn't have the greatest of reputations. Some might think it was kind of, you know, tattoo parlor, a little dark, a little dingy. Well, today's guest went into the deep end of the pool and completely disrupted an industry that didn't have the greatest reputation. And in so disrupting that industry of the tattoo industry, he created what is now today a global brand, a brand that's valued at $30 million. And he's also the author of his brand new book. It's called Brand Renegades, and he wrote it with his wife, with his business partner. Today's guest is Sean Dowdell, and he wrote it with his wife, Thora. So it's a pleasure to have you on board today, Sean. I built you up, and I'm putting a lot of pressure on your shoulders for today's interview. Because as the host of the show, as a business owner myself, I see too many local businesses never give themselves the credit or the belief that they can actually create their own brand. You did it. So let's jump into it. Thanks for being on board today.
Thanks for having me on today. I appreciate it.
No, my pleasure. And again, so the brand new book, Brand Renegades, Our Fearless Path from Startup to Global Brand. Now, why did you, and as I said in the intro, you know, you were part of the group. It was Gray Days. I'm sorry about that. So you have Rockstar on, you know, the resume, and you decided to get into the tattoo industry, 1995, and you decided to disrupt it and to really go about it differently. Why did you decide to get into that industry?
At the time, the band was doing really, really well. And we had just signed a couple of we had signed a record deal. And we're starting to do these regional tours where we would be out in Texas or California or Colorado for 3-5 days at a time. And while the band was doing well and selling tickets and making money, us as individuals were not. So when we would come back from these little satellite tours, we would still have our bills. And it was very uncomfortable for us, especially if we did 2 or 3 of those little satellite tours in a month, to come back to a bunch of bills that we really couldn't afford. So the bass player and I decided to open up a tattoo and piercing studio so that we could run the business. And while we were on the road, we could actually still afford to pay our bills. That's as small as the initial intent was basically so that we could pay our bills while we were out and about trying to become rock stars.
So essentially, you guys decide to start another business to fuel your rock star lifestyle and being able to go out and continue to be rock stars on the road.
That's exactly right. That was the initial intent behind it.
Wow. So you started off, and you know, you mentioned through the book a number of times, and everybody kind of understands, especially 20 years ago, 25 years ago, you know, what was the perception of tattoos and piercing in that industry. Now, you mentioned the book, and you already have said it here, we decided to open up a tattoo studio, not parlor. Now, take us through, for those who don't know, again, the business, the locations, Club Tattoo. Take us through what it looks like when they walk in. What's the user experience? What did you guys create that, in a way, disrupted the industry?
So, you know, it wasn't as contrived as we're going to disrupt the industry, but we did have a different thought process. And as we started to notice how we approach this specific business model as opposed to the traditional approach, that's when we realized eventually after a few years, we were a disruptor. We were being disrupted to the market because of the way we took it on and the way we presented ourselves. When you come into a Club Tattoo, you'll see very quickly that the aesthetic is very upscale. It is very female friendly. It is very safe. It is very clean. It is very well lit. You see lots of gold. You see lots of diamonds. Everyone is well dressed. The aesthetic business model is completely a left turn from a normal tattoo parlor, especially in the 90s that had this connotation, this attribute where people thought of tattoo parlors as dirty biker kind of seedy business model. And we got as far away from that as we could initially. We took all of the designs off of the walls. We made everything feel at the time in the 90s like an upscale hair salon. Now it's a little bit more like an art gallery, interactive customer experience. But initially in the 90s, we were going for a high-end hair salon kind of look. We wanted women to feel comfortable. One of the things we realized very early on was that the biker vibe was not something that females enjoyed. They didn't want to feel like they were being intimidated when they walked into the business. They wanted to feel safe. They wanted to feel good. They wanted to kind of take ownership of that experience. And we caught on to that really quick. And that's why we modeled it completely in a different direction.
Well, it's interesting because you've mentioned women now twice. And in the book, you talked about obviously the importance of being able to identify, you know, who is your target market. You got to really know who you're going after. What percentage, maybe we could talk about the industry a little bit. What percentage of the tattoo and piercing industry is male versus female?
It's very close to 50-50. Our business model is actually about 60% women, 40% men. But I think that's because of the way we present ourselves, and we make sure that our female clientele understand that we're the place to come to. We have this weird mantra that my wife and I say. We say, women, if you can get them to spend their money, the men will come. They will spend their money. They'll spend their men's money, and the men will spend their men's money because the women will go there. The women's are the trendsetters, so to speak, in fashion. And that's really what we've become, is a fashion brand. It's no longer a seedy, rebellious thing to get a tattoo or piercing. It's so mainstream. It's become a fashion statement, so to speak, whether it's the gold nostril jewelry that you're wearing, or if it's the gold navel jewelry with the diamonds that you're wearing, or the tattoo that you're getting that took, you know, a year to complete, that you had to get on a waiting list to be scheduled in to see a specific, very well-known artist, because it's really a work of art at this point.
So then... So again, Thora, your wife, who your partner's with, you guys wrote the book together, again, the brand new book, Brand Renegades. So she kind of knew that if you attract the women, if you create that environment where they feel comfortable, they're enjoying themselves, it's more of a fashion statement than a rebellious statement, they kind of drive the purchasing decision. They're the influencers, and then the men will follow, and they'll spend their money there as well.
That's absolutely true. And I had to come to that conclusion by reflecting inward. And when I wanted to go clothes shopping, when I wanted to go shoe shopping, when I wanted to go and find new jewelry or watches to wear, I would always ask my wife, where should we go? And she would suggestively sell to me where it was that was cool to go. I already knew what was cool, but I needed that affirmation. And women do that in our society. It's our culture, and it really has worked for us.
So then when you started out, again, the very genesis of the tattoo studio was to support the rock star lifestyle and touring. And then you were doing something that you just mentioned a while ago without really having the intent of being a disruptor, okay? Just kind of, you know, ended up being that way as you're sharing the story. So what did you see were really some of the elements, you know, like, you know, dark and biker, you know, motorcycle guys who go there? What were some of the other elements that you recognized that you want to say, hey, we're going to do the 180 degree opposite of?
So keep in mind, our business model was a culmination of 26 years at this point to get where we're at. It wasn't one moment where I just laid out this master plan. It wasn't an Elon Musk moment where I said, I'm going to invent an electric car and change the world. I'm a visionary in a different way with my business. It took me many, many years to get here and different little incremental developmental stages that along the way. The first thing was to make it clean and well lit. That was our first. Back in the 90s, that was the first thing we did. But along the way, we've developed a software called interactive tattoo software, where initially, you know, going to traditional tattoo and piercing studios, you'll see designs that are kind of up on the wall in frames. We took that completely out of our business model. We integrated into what we call interactive tattoo. It's a touchscreen technology that we designed and built over about a year and a half with my partner, Kristen Davis. And it gives the user a completely different experience when they walk into our stores. First of all, they can look at all of the different artist portfolios, all the work that they've done in a very cleanable fashion, something that they can look that's it's very user-friendly and intuitive, like their iPhone, where you scroll along, you can enlarge with your fingers, and it's an interactive experience. We found when we invented this part of our business model, our customers that weren't actually getting tattooed would stay in the store for an hour, 2 hours, just to be on these screens. It was really an interesting observation that we came upon. And by them staying in the store, of course, they would spend ancillary dollars on t-shirts and jewelry and different items that weren't necessarily the service experience we were offering on the front end. So that's the first thing, was interactive tattoo. It completely separates us from everybody else. Secondly is the quality of what we're offering. We try to hire the best tattoo and tattoo artists and piercing specialist in the world. We pay them really well. We motivate them with paid time off and healthcare benefits and things like that. But we also offer really high-end body jewelry, which you don't really see in a lot of tattoo and piercing studios, where you're seeing literally $500,000 worth of inventory of gold and platinum and diamonds and sapphires. And these things really elevate us, this visual elevation that customers understand when they walk in to one of our club tattoo studios, that it's really something different from the moment they walk in and they're greeted by one of our staff. Everybody looks the part. Everybody speaks the part. It's not a lowbrow operation. And you understand not only that, but the areas that our businesses are located in, we're in some of the highest end casino hotel operations in the world in Las Vegas, the Venetian Grand Canal, Planet Hollywood, Miracle Mile Shops, the Link Hotel and Casino. We're on Fifth Avenue and Scottsdale Road in Old Town Scottsdale. So where we choose to be located and surrounded by the other tenant mixes really elevates our story as well.
So you mentioned some of your locations, and as a business, you've already been through two big challenges. You were through the financial bust of 2008 and 9, and of course, we're still reeling from the pandemic, of course, of 2020, now, which is still continuing to rear its effects in 2021. You mentioned, now this is something that I think, if we get off the topic for branding for a moment, and you're just sharing your experience as the entrepreneur, you guys in 2008 or 9, if I have the timeline right, which was a, you know, we know what happened with the mortgage and the banking industry. You guys decided to really roll the dice in a big, big way. And I think at the time, correct me if I'm wrong, Sean, it was you guys had opened up one of the biggest locations in Vegas that you had to that date. Is that right?
Yes, sir. Yeah, so 3,500 square feet. And we had started the process of expanding into the Las Vegas market back in 2005. We initially had a deal at the Hard Rock. We would have been the first tattoo and piercing studio in a casino in 2005. That deal eventually fell apart. New general management. We went over to the Cosmopolitan. We had a deal inside the Cosmopolitan. And then the bust happened, like you said. And in the middle of us, we had the store designed, had our lease in place, everything. In the middle of all that, the crash happened. And then the bankers, Deutsche Bank, stepped in and took over the project from a billionaire named Bruce Eichner. I had to fly up and meet in front of a room full of bankers, and they just berated me. They didn't understand our concept at all, and they basically just wanted rent payers. And I probably one of the bravest moments in my business life. I got up in front of a room full of bankers after they berated me for 45 minutes, and I said, "If you guys don't understand why our brand makes you cool, then we shouldn't be here anyways. I'll go across the street and I'll cut a deal there." And I did. I walked across the street. At the time, we had an agent named Jim Redding. He said, "Hey, I got your meeting over at Planet Hollywood Miracle Mile." I set up a meeting. My wife flew up to meet me in the next couple of days. And within a week or two, we had a deal over there. And it was the best thing that ever happened to us. We just stood our ground and we launched that in 2009, March of 2009. So we got just past that crash point. Sure. And it was the best thing for our brand. We launched into the global positioning we have now.
So, I mean, the story was a great story that you shared in the book. And again, today's guest, Sean Dowdell, is sharing his brand new book, Brand Renegades, today. And he, along with his wife, Thora, are the partners and owners of Club Tattoo, a multi-million dollar brand of business. Now, so you shared the story, but let's go back a little bit in that story, because as the financial world is imploding, you know, when you're making a commitment, I think you said 3,500 square feet of some prime real estate, were there the naysayers? Were there the advisors, the accountants, the attorneys, the friends saying, you know, "Sean, you're out of your mind. What are you doing?"
Of course. There's always more people that tell you you can't do something than the people that believe in you. But I try to have a really tight core of humans around me that I trust. And those people, like my accountants, my family, my wife, a couple of very near and dear friends, they believe in what we're doing. And they know we could do it if we set our mind to it. At the time, I had a partner, Chester Bennington, who was the singer for my band, also the singer for Linkin Park. And he believed in the concept and had become a partner in Club Tattoo. So we ponied up just about $2 million to open that store. We knew our concept was different. We knew what we were bringing to the Vegas Strip. It hadn't been done in the way we were doing it before, and it was going to change a lot of things. Was it going to be this gangbuster financial windfall? We didn't know if that was going to happen, but we did know it would be successful enough to maintain itself and give our brand a little bit of a global audience, more than it had had before. And that was really why we rolled the dice. We knew it could sustain itself. We didn't know how much money it was going to make. We thought it might do well, but we turned out to be really conservative in our pro formas, and it did phenomenal. That store does about $4 million a year now. So we gambled and it paid off, but it was also, you know, we tried to mitigate as much risk as possible going into that deal and making sure that all the numbers worked and that a worst case scenario we could survive, and we did.
So even if it did implode and you lost everything, you still knew that you guys could continue.
Well, we theoretically, yeah, we thought we could. We thought we could.
Right.
I'll tell you this in 100% honesty. If the pandemic would have happened in 2010, probably not. Probably not. Because I don't know that I've ever in my lifetime, and I'm 47 right now, I don't know that I've ever been in a situation where all of my businesses were closed down at one time and I still had to pay rent and utilities and all these other things that seemed so incredibly out of place. I've never experienced anything like, I hope I never have to again.
Sure.
We were lucky to be in the financial position we were in when this actually happened. But I can absolutely sympathize with those who shut their businesses down during the pandemic, because it's really untenable for a long period of time. I don't see how the businesses are doing it in Europe.
Listen, we could have a whole show on just that alone. So, and again, in particular, you know, the retail and the service businesses, such as yours, such as a tattoo and piercing studio, is going to be crushed. Now, I think if I read it or I saw it in another interview you had recently, that in whether it's Vegas or Arizona, you guys only opened up to 100% capacity in June of this year. Was that right?
Yeah. Yeah, we were at about, so various stages of opening, you know, the initial was 25%. Then it went to 40%, then 50%, then 75%, and then 100% in June. But as of this morning, we just got a mandate from the governor of Nevada where everyone has to wear masks again, whether you're working or walking around. And that's going to absolutely devastate Vegas. It's one of the worst decisions. He's not following what's working in other states. He's just following what California is doing. I think it's a horrible decision for the businesses. I really do.
Well, yeah, I mean, we have to be very careful as the government, as business owners, because this country cannot afford another shutdown. You know, we all know that. And it's not, there's no additional round of PPP coming out. That's for sure.
If there was, that only helps you with your staff. I mean, you have other expenses that people don't understand. Your rent, PPP didn't cover your rent. Very, very small amount of it covered your rent. And you're talking, so the business we're talking at Planet Hollywood, that rent's almost $50,000 a month. Our rent at Venetian is almost $35,000 a month. I don't care how rich you are, you will go broke really fast having to pay those rents without any type of income.
Now let's go back. I want to get back to we talked about the brand, and part of what makes a brand, and I'd love to get your take on this, is having, and I believe you spoke about it in a number of different ways in the book, having a consistent customer and client experience. Okay, so now you have multiple locations, and you're not just producing a widget. You have artists, literally, who work for you. So how do you create, you have the retail side, which you can sell in the merchandise, but then you have the experience of the tattoos, the piercings, et cetera. How are you able to create, now I think you have about 100 employees, a consistent user experience that represents the brand the way you want to represent the brand? That's not an easy thing to do.
So we talk about this in the book at various lengths. We talk about touch points, your customers' touch points. As long as your customers' touch points are equal at all levels, if you have multiple locations, so to speak, from the moment they look you up online in Google to your website, to your Yelp, to your social media, to the moment they walk into the store and see what your brand is. A lot of brands, I will say this, they puff their chest a little bit online and social media wise, and you get to their actual brick and mortar store and it's a far cry from what they project online. So I think you have to be consistent with your brand messaging, and the aesthetic of what you're doing has to all be very uniform and cohesive. Now, that's only basically to get you to step two or three of the customer's journey. Once they walk in, they have to be greeted the same at all of the locations. They have to have the same energy in all of the stores. Down to the music you're playing in the stores has to be consistent if you want your customer's experience to be about them and not about you. And that's what we had to come to the defining moment in our business fork in the road, so to speak, was we realized that it wasn't our journey. It was our customer's journey. The whole reason we were in business was because our customers were supporting what we were doing. How could we improve upon that? How could we make our customer's journey not only more consistent, cohesive, but how do we make it better? So those are things that we touch on quite a bit in the book and something that we practice in everyday business life.
So you have the listener, and I start off the show by saying, you have a lot of small businesses, independent businesses, whether it's a professional services firm, an accounting firm, a restaurant, a florist, and so many of them don't think they're worthy of a brand, or they don't have what it takes to be a brand. Now, your story is great, and again, it's started in 1995, so it's not an overnight success story. It obviously takes many, many years. Let's take it back to the listener now, who was like, yeah, I would love to be able to have more of a brand, even here just locally in my own town or regionally. What are some things that, a typical small business could embrace, small, just bite-sized initiatives that they could take to begin to build a brand that's not overwhelming for them?
Whether they like it or not, they are a brand. It's just a matter of how large of a brand. So a lot of people, they think, I'm not a brand like Coke. Well, you may not be a brand like Coke, but you are a brand. You're a brand within your community. All a brand means is that you have a set value of core attributes that people associate with whatever your company is. So when people think of my brand, Club Tattoo, hopefully they think of higher end, a little bit of luxury, high quality, good experience, all of these attributes that they place a value, a placeholder and a value on is what makes my brand a brand. So everyone's business is a brand. If you're an individual selling yourself, if you're an influencer, whatever it is that you're doing, you have a brand. It's whatever values and attributes are given to your word association, so to speak, with the people that you are interacting with. So the things that we talk about in this book is we talk about as a small business owner to think smaller, like a small business owner. Understand your core demographic. Know where your customer is coming from, who they are, their age, their sex, how much money they spend, and how often they visit you. Find out these simple things, and you will understand very quickly how to get to those customers. Generally, a brick and mortar store is going to have a very small radius, meaning that if you are, I don't know, a bookstore in Los Angeles, you're not going to be having people traveling from San Francisco down to the bookstore, unless it's a very specialized bookstore, that often. So you have this core audience and this radius of frequent visitors, of people that will see and know your brand often. How do you reach those people? So yeah, you may be competing with, let's talk about a shoe store. If you're a local shoe store, you might be competing with a Nike store at the mall for people that are looking for shoes. But if you can separate yourself in a niche market or something that differentiates you from that large mega brand, it still gets you in the conversation and the competitive field for that specific industry, somebody who wants shoes, but at the same time, you're not competing for the same pair of shoes to sell.
So it's really embracing the fact that you are a small business owner to think small. And then what is that one outlier, if you will, that one factor that can differentiate you from the Nike store at the outlet?
You broke up a little bit there. Can you say that one more time?
Sure. So, and I think it's a very important point that you made, and it's good that we're going to revisit it, that the small business owner, it's okay to think that they're small and embrace the fact that they're small, you know, and then but then also identify what is that one special item, one special initiative that separates them from the outlet store, you know, the Nike store.
Yeah. So know who you are. Know what it is that you offer the community that is a differentiating factor. So if you know, I've seen these little shaved ice stores that I never knew that you could survive. And it's not a diss to these guys. I'm not trying to insult them. I just, ignorance, I didn't know that this was a thing that people would actually come and spend money on. And I'm seeing them pop up all over the place. These guys are competing against Cold Stone. They're competing against Baskin Robbins, all these, you know, Ben and Jerry's. They have something that is similar, not exact, in the same general industry, but they have the differentiating item that they're selling to a key niche market. I'm not the person they're advertising to, but at the same time, I understand ice cream. I understand the broader look, the broader industry, so to speak, and they've created a niche. They have a differentiation that allows them to play in the same field and compete against these giants like Cold Stone and Ben and Jerry's.
That's a very valuable point then, Sean, because then what's happening is, like you said, these shaved ice places that, you know, you hadn't really considered how much of a business really could it be, but they're competing against the big ones, the Ben and Jerry's. So it's by competing with them, and correct me if I'm wrong from how you're seeing it, now they've made themselves a part of the conversation. So if people are thinking Ben and Jerry's, can they also think of, you know, the local shaved ice place? And I guess part of branding, what we want to get to, is become a part of the conversation.
100%. Take a note out of the McDonald's Burger King playbook. You always see these fast food restaurants popping up next to each other, and it's not because they're trying to say, oh, we're better than this, we're going to take business away. It's like, no, they both mutually understand that by being in the same proximity, that people are going to think of their brands collectively when they want that type of food. So it's the same thing in the retail market. If you can get yourself into the same niche, the same thought process of the customer, your name, you might not be brought up 10 out of 10 times, but they might think of you as one or two out of the top 10, and therefore generating more traffic, generating more traction for your company.
That's a great point. That's a great point. Again, today's guest, Sean Dowdell, he's sharing his brand new book, Brand Renegades, as to how he disrupted the industry of tattooing and piercing back in 1995. Now, so Sean, let me ask you. So you've done this, and everybody has competition, whether it's direct or indirect. You know, there's always competition for people, for dollars in people's wallets. Are you, because I don't have piercings and tattoos. I'm not a good target market for you, so I don't know the industry at all, really, truth be told. Are you seeing your competition, whether it's regionally or, you know, people across the country who are catching up with you, who are kind of maybe following in the trails that you guys have blazed?
Of course, that's inevitable. And I'd be lying to myself if I said it wasn't happening. It's no, and I hate to keep using Elon Musk as an example, but you know, when he first launched his electric car, look at what's happening to his company. Competitors are coming out of the blue, left and right, trying to compete with what basically the market he's created. There was no market for electric cars until he invented one. And now there's, you know, everyone is going that direction. So he literally changed the entire industry. And I believe we've done the same thing. We were a disruptor. We've brought a completely different, unique expectation and identity to the tattoo and piercing field. And a lot of people are taking note and realizing that we've set new standards, and those standards are either met or they're not met. And I think that a lot of entrepreneurs in the tattoo and piercing world, whether they like it or not, are taking notice of what we've done and following suit.
Well, and then the fact that you're still embracing it, you know, it also keeps you humble, because if you don't, they could catch up one day and eat your lunch if you're not careful.
Hey, there's people that are doing things in my industry that I learn from all the time.
Yeah.
Are we arguably some of the most successful? Yeah, but it doesn't mean that everything we do is better than everybody else. It's just as life doesn't work like that. You can learn from everyone, your competitors included. And that doesn't mean you have to hate your competitors. Learn from them, and it's actually going to make you better. So there's nothing wrong with that. And yeah. I try to teach around the world. And there's a lot of tattoo and piercing shop studio owners that will hit me up for advice, and they'll email me and they'll message me, or they'll come in to hear me speak, because they realize I'm adding value to their company. And it's not to come and hate on us or discount what we've done in the industry. A lot of them will pay homage and say, you've done some great stuff. We're going to try to do it even better. And I applaud that. I learn and try to make my brand better. And Thora does as well every day.
Let me go back to the experience, because I think it's an interesting experience that, you know, you have the studio, not the Paula, but the studio, and trying to make everything from the music and how people are greeted consistent. I would have to imagine one of the challenges of all businesses is on the personnel side. And then you have people who have a real specific skill. They're artists, they're piercers, okay? How do you, when you're hiring, whether it's you doing it directly, your staff, whomever, how do you know that an artist is right for Club Tattoo?
That's an excellent question. And I wish I had a magic wand that I could wave in the air and go, this person is perfect. I really don't know. I have to take an educated guess through my experience. And even with that educated guess, a lot of times I'm wrong. I mean, I just had a situation a couple weeks ago where I brought in an artist from another state. He moved here. He was great for the first week and then literally just turned into a completely different human, and we had to part ways. Not everybody's meant to be in this environment. We're very well organized. It's an excellent structure. We expect people to show up on time and leave on time and put the clients first. So a lot of people will put their best foot forward in an interview or even a guest spot. And you know, things rear their heads. I wish I had a magic potion to figure out who was perfect all the time as I'm hiring. And it's really a 60-40, 50-50 guess a lot of the times. But, you know, I have to go on their personality, their charisma, their character, their past jobs. I will reach out and get references of people in the industry. I'll take all that into account. And sometimes I'm right, but there's a lot of times I'm not right.
Well, listen,
and sometimes people will surprise me.
Yeah, and that's true of all business owners, though. Getting the right people is probably one of the biggest challenges in any successful business, for sure.
100%.
Now, all right, so here's an interesting question and it just kind of came to me as we're talking today, and it's been a great conversation. I really appreciate your time jumping on board the Profit Express today. If you could do like a blind survey of your clients across the country, what would you hope when they say, hey, what's the first thing that comes to mind when you hear Club Tattoo? What do you want them to think to know that, hey, we did it. We did our job right.
Quality. So if we're going to use keywords, the first thing I would want them to understand is quality. Second is value. And I think we've done a good job at portraying those attributes in our brand. We are not the cheapest by far. We don't want to be the cheapest. I don't believe that in any industry you can be the cheapest and the best. So therefore, we're trying to choose the path of being the best. So we had to decide which client we were going to service. Was it the client that understood the value, that was willing to spend a little bit more to get a little bit more and have these guarantees of high quality work and jewelry and all these things? Or were we going to try, in my opinion, race to the bottom and try to be the cheapest? That to me is a losing proposition. It's not something that I wrap my mind around real well. And I understand there's tons of businesses that do well being the cheapest. It just doesn't work for the branding and the modeling we're trying to do.
I love the phrase race to the bottom. That is so cringeworthy of a phrase. But yeah, people are doing it every day. Sean, I got just another moment here for another question. You have a very interesting, eclectic background. As you look back over the span of Club Tattoo since 95, if you had a do-over or a mulligan, what would it be?
Oh, man, I would not open the San Francisco store that we did in 2011, 2012. That was my biggest business failure. And I write about that in the book with Thora. We were looking at all the traffic that was on the pier. We opened a store in Pier 39. We spent $2 million to do it. And it did not, I mean, it lasted 3 years. We ended up closing it. I ended up eating $2 million in cash.
Ouch.
And it hurt. And that's a lesson I would have loved to learn for $100,000 instead of $2 million. And I believe I probably could have learned that lesson a different way, opening in the wrong location for a few hundred grand versus that. That was brutal and nearly destroyed my marriage, nearly destroyed my business. Luckily, the San Francisco store was our second flagship store and not our first, because had we opened that before Vegas, I don't think we'd be in business right now. Mm. That was a detrimental turning point in our business. We recovered for it. We're doing better now than we ever have. We've expanded. All these things are going great. But if I had a mulligan, that would be it for sure.
Well, so why'd you decide to go into that particular location, though?
Well, you know, they were courting us for about a year. And it was right after we had opened our flagship in Las Vegas. And so we took several field trips out to San Francisco and the pier. They were claiming they got about 70,000 or some or 70,000 or so patrons a day that walked the pier. The average dollar spent made sense in our pro forma. As we walked up and down the pier, we just saw tons of people on vacation wanting to spend money. That was our client, or so we thought. What we missed was the place where we put our business was at the very end of the pier by the Golden Gate Bridge viewpoints and by the sea lions. And we didn't realize that those 60,000 or 70,000 people that came to the pier every day, less than a third of them make it to the back. So they were charging full rents based on those numbers, but a third of them got to the back. So you're missing out on 40,000 right off the top. There was some serious landlord issues, some serious conflict of interest. We write about this in the book where the landlord put into our lease. We had a restaurant above our space where the pipes would bust open and leak all the time. And we wrote it into the lease that if any damage was done, the restaurant would pay for the damage. We had five major floods in 3 years. Five. That destroyed our 60,000 wood floors, destroyed our merchandise. They never paid us a dollar. Well, come to find out that the landlord was one of the business partners in owning the restaurant. Complete conflict of interest. Never divulged it. And we had an out. And we just got to our breaking point. And we just couldn't deal. The city was the most unfriendly small business city we've ever done businesses. The taxes make no sense. The employment laws make no sense. It was a disaster on all fronts.
Well, like you said, fortunately, it wasn't your first big flagship, and Vegas was. So yeah. Now we're here, you know, talking on the Profit Express. You're sharing your brand new book, Brand Renegades. Listen, good luck with the book. It's a great read. Thanks so much for sharing some of your time with me, Sean. People wanting to follow you, Club Tattoo, what are the handles on social?
Our social media handles are Brand Renegades, Business Game Changers, Club Tattoo, and of course, my wife and I have our own accounts, Sean and Thora Dowdell. You can find us the business side, businessgamechangers.com or clubtattoo.com. Give it a read. Hopefully you like it. It's on Audible, audiobooks as well. And one of the things you just touched on I thought was really cool is we talk about a lot of our failures in the book. And I think it's really important as a business owner to own your failures and talk about them, because we learn so much more from when we fail than when we succeed. And my wife and I, we really thought it was important to include that in the book. So we weren't trying to come across as everything we've ever touched has turned to gold, because that's just not the truth of it.
Well, yeah, if you don't embrace some of those failures, you know, you're just not being honest with yourself, or you haven't been in business very long.
Yeah. So thank you so much for having me on today. I really enjoyed it.
No, hey, my pleasure. Great conversation. Love the message.
Absolutely.
And again, that was Sean Dowdell sharing his brand new book, Brand Renegades. And listen, to you listening, thank you so much, as always, for sharing some of your time with me today. And every Wednesday, we're dropping new episodes, just like the one with Sean today, on Instagram at Profit Express, on Twitter at Profit_Express. Oh, I'm sorry, wait. Instagram is at The Profit Express. Excuse me. Remember to keep listening and downloading. And as always, let's not forget about those who support and love the show, like Corbett Public Relations, who have been promoting and protecting businesses and brands for over 30 years. They're a great group of people. Please visit them at CorbettPR.com. That's CorbettPR.com. And until next week, continue to win the battle for business.